But it doesn't look like we're Education, Finance, and Economic Competitiveness Division Committee meeting will come to order March 10th. The first item on the agenda tonight is today is Partnerships for the Future, P16. Welcome back. Where is it? Mr. Chris, Mr. Patel, Ms. Commissioner Segrin, Director Hugard. Oh, she's coming.
Just shuffle through and find the right piece of paper when you get started.
Please
this afternoon. Do. My name is Cindy Chris. I'm System Director for P16 Collaboration for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. I think some people think of me as kind of the gen mother of the P16 partnership because I did the staffing and coordination for Chancellor McCormick during the first 2 years of the partnership and helped convene the planning group as we were creating the partnership. You have a handout that I brought, two pieces of paper. I'm not even going to talk about everything on it, but there are a couple of things that I thought might be useful for you to have in the context of the P16 partnership. So I'm just going to speak very briefly about the partnership, how it got started, very generally about accomplishments up to the time when President Brunich became the chair a year ago. Then I'll turn it over to my colleague Kent Patel to talk about what's happened, particularly in the last year since you had a presentation for this committee. And then Commissioner Segrin and Director Hugard will speak briefly. So you may know that what we're doing in Minnesota in the context of P16 collaboration is similar to efforts across the country. There's a lot of attention to P16 collaboration. The Minnesota P16 Education Partnership became a formal partnership in February of 2003. One of the things that's notable about it is that by comparison to some other states, it's a voluntary partnership. That is, there are no membership dues. There's nothing in statute currently to tell us to meet. No budget. No legislative request for funding has ever been made. We just meet regularly and address issues of mutual interest, primarily focused on college preparation and transition and teacher-educator quality. Several questions have come up on the Senate side around these bills, and so I thought I would take just a minute to let you know that we came together as a group of organizations, initially 14 organizations, and we're now up to 21. And we've had as our membership criteria that the members are all major statewide educational groups or constituencies or non-educational statewide organizations with a stated interest in P16 education. So we're looking for that broad statewide perspective. Prospective members may be nominated by any partnership member and added with the approval of the majority. And as I mentioned, we started out with 14 members and now have 21. So at several points in time, we've added members to the partnership. The voting representatives, there's one from each member organization, and in most cases, that's the CEO or president of the organization. During the first 2 years of the partnership, Chancellor McCormick was the chair, and we had working groups that developed and implemented an e-mentoring project for new teachers. We worked on an aligned math assessment, looking at how high school tests given to all students might become useful as a placement instrument for colleges and universities. We conducted some research into issues regarding remedial or developmental education. We started working on a college access programs database. And we also spent some time reviewing and responding to the Teaching Commission report, which was a report by a national commission several years ago. In 2005, we transitioned in leadership from Chancellor McCormick to Commissioner Segrin. And under her able leadership, we had 6 working groups. They focused on college and work readiness, specifically in English, language arts, and mathematics, on creating a P16 data system, on continuing research and developing an action plan for remedial or developmental education, primarily in mathematics, which you may know is the largest area of remedial enrollment, continuing the work looking at a possible aligned math assessment, coordination of web-based career information. The state, through various entities, funds and operates a number of sites, and we were looking at whether we could create a one-stop shop that would be more efficient and effective. And then, again, are still in college access. And in 2007, following our structure that has a chair and vice chair each serving for two-year terms, the leadership transitioned to President Robert Brunich from the University of Minnesota. And under his leadership, you can see in the handout there are four working groups that have been formed, two that really continue the efforts begun under Chancellor McCormick and Commissioner Segrin, and two that are new. And that's the work about which Mr. Patel will speak. So unless you want any questions at this point, that's kind of a quick historical overview.
Very comprehensive, though. Thank you very much. Mr. Patel.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kent Patel. I'm the Executive Director of the University's College Readiness Consortium, and one of my responsibilities during President Brunich's tenure as Chair of the P16 Partnership is coordinating that 21 organization effort. You have a buff or mustard-colored one-pager that gives an overview of the four priorities that the partnership has set during the President's tenure. Before I quickly tick them off, let me give you a sense of where they came from. The mission of P16 is alignment of our pre-K through 12 and higher ed systems in order to improve the total number of people in our society, in our state, who have got the knowledge and skills to succeed in a high-stakes, high-skill economy. And we first, when the President took over chairmanship this summer, spent time looking nationally and in other states at best practices. We also took a look at where the P16 partners could most likely make a difference with their existing resources and priorities. We sort of drew a Venn diagram, and where do these partners, these 21 organizations' interests overlap, where we can push for change. And if I had to summarize the common theme that runs through these priorities, I would say it's getting the signals right, getting the signals from higher education to our kids and our educators to know what it's going to take to succeed in post-secondary education. So how are we doing that? The first priority is what we call the macro post-secondary and workforce readiness working group. That's an effort to come up with what we call the one-pager. We have, largely through the efforts of the P16 partnership during the commissioner's tenure as chair, very detailed outlines of what readiness means in math and language arts. But ultimately, I know as a former classroom teacher, you got to get this to the point where you can describe readiness in, if not a soundbite, a short conversation, and then you can really build your program around that. So that first working group is going to be our effort to try and really put it all together and say, across our institutions in Minnesota, what does readiness mean? And not just in terms of knowledge and skills you can measure on a test, but also in terms of the habits of mind, the soft skills that it takes to proceed through the university and another institution of higher education. So that's the macro group. The second group is in science. We're going to be attempting to define readiness for high-skill employment and higher education in science. In some ways, that's a more challenging effort than we had in reading and mathematics, or I should say language arts, because there is no recognized body of standards in science, and yet we all know science is as critical for our students as those other content areas. The third area is saying what's important is not just the readiness standards, but meeting them. So the third working group is what we call our science instruction working group, and that is trying to bring some very creative minds together from higher ed, the business community, and K-12, including classroom teachers, to say, how do we help students meet those standards for readiness in science? Many of you realize that in our elementary school classrooms across the state, science risks being squeezed out, partly because of the requirements of No Child Left Behind and other priorities, but also because we have a lot of teachers who themselves didn't learn science in the inquiry-based way that we know we need to help students understand. So that's our third working group, science instruction. And the fourth is continuing Minnesota's progress toward a longitudinal data system. We ultimately, as a state, have got to get to the point where we can look at course taking and at other factors in our K-12 system and follow them through toward success in higher education. This is a major infrastructure priority for, I would say, the state and certainly for the partnership. And Commissioner Segrin and Director Hegard will be testifying on one immediate opportunity that the state has to take a very important step toward this longer-term goal. And candidly, for those of you who, as I know many of you do, have been around the country, what a state like Florida can do in analyzing the progress through K-12 to higher ed is quite stunning. And we in Minnesota can get there over the next several years as well if we put some of the important infrastructure pieces in place in the near future. So, Madam Chair, that's an overview of our four priorities during the President's tenure as Chair of the P16 Partnership. And with your permission, I'll turn it over to the continuing discussion.
You have my permission. Welcome, Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I want to now transition into one of our work groups that is continuing. And one of the things that we have done in P16 is not necessarily had to go to the legislature for any requests because we basically been able to use the resources and expertise of our higher ed and K-12 systems to work on the work group issues that we had defined. However, now we do have a request that we need to come to the legislature for, and that is in regard to creating a longitudinal data system that will follow our students using the MARS student ID number that's already assigned to our K-12 children and extending that MARS identification number to any student that goes to a public or private institution in Minnesota. And that would include all the private colleges, MINSU, the University of Minnesota, and our for-profit types of school districts or higher ed institutions, too. The purpose of that is then to help us be able to look at the data that both the Office of Higher Education collects and the K-12 system already collects. We already collect a lot of data to see how our students are doing. For example, we don't know once our students graduate from high school how many students we have maybe an idea of how many enroll in college, but we don't know how many persist. We don't know how many complete a degree, if it's an AA degree in 2 or 3 years, or if it's a 4-year degree in 4 or 6 years. We don't know how many students that have come out of our system get a degree, let's say, in the STEM discipline, something that we're really talking about and something that we really need to increase the numbers of scientists and mathematicians in our state. So this will allow us to do this. This also allow us to say if our students are arriving in higher education and they're not prepared well, let's say they're not doing well in math courses when they get to college or language arts, then we can start going back to our K-12 system and saying, well, what did they take in high school that did prepare them or did not prepare them? So we've got a lot of opportunity to look at this data in summary data. It's not going to be individual student data, but aggregate data. And we'll be able to break it down even among diverse populations and really do some research. What we need your permission for is to be able to share this data that the Office of Higher Ed collects and what we collect among ourselves so that we can do this research. And so I think the page passed out. We had some original language, and we've modified it somewhat. And if it says Senate file, it's drafted to a Senate file. I just want to give you the example of the language. And did they pass it on? You did not pass it on. Okay. It's coming.
Good.
Oh, it is. Okay, it's already in your packet. I'm sorry I gave you guys extra work. If you can look at the language, it describes that the Minnesota Department of Education and Office of Higher Ed will be sharing this data. It meets the federal FERPA laws, that's the privacy laws, that allows educational institutions to look at private data. And then list the things that we will be collecting. We wanted to be specific that this is educational data. It's not going to be data that has anything to do with behavioral or medical or anything like that. And I'm going to turn it over to Susan Hugard, and she can kind of give you a little bit more information about the process that we went through.
Welcome, Ms. Hugard.
Thank you, Chair Murphy and members. My name is Susan Hugard. I'm the Director of the Office of Higher Education. We're also a cabinet agency, so really what we're asking you today is to allow us to have permission to exchange selected data between the two agencies. We have a robust data system at our agency now. We produce an accountability report, a new one that I'll be able to distribute to you this coming Wednesday, I think. And we couldn't do that report if we didn't use some of our enrollment data. Commissioner Segrin has a very robust data system at the Department of Education, but it would be, I think our point is that it would be very valuable to the state to be able to share selected data between these two very robust systems. What we've been doing, I headed up this work group for the P16 partnership, and I, about 2 years ago, we started on this, and it sounds like an awfully long time, but it really took a while for us to work through these issues. Our group included representatives and stakeholders from K-12 and higher education, and basically we walked through each data point on the K-12 side and each data point on the higher ed side and decided what we needed to collect and what we didn't, so it was very selective. And then we also looked at new data, for example, ACT, SAT, class rank, course taking, whether the students had taken an after-school enrichment program. I mean, what might be really interesting, for example, is to look at one population of at-risk students and another population of at-risk students, follow them up into higher education and find out why did one group persist and finish their education while another did not. With this kind of a data system, you'd be able to look back and look at some of the factors that were different between these two groups of students to see what made a difference. I think as Commissioner Segrin mentioned, we are following FERPA and the Minnesota Data Practices Law, which is even more stringent oftentimes than the federal law. We're also going to be issuing the proper Tennyson warnings on both the higher ed and the K-12 side. And with that, I'd be happy to respond to any questions that you might have. Thank you.
So that concludes the presentation. Are there any questions along the way? Representative
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, it's interesting because we usually don't see bills come in sort of this form, but I know it's Carlos's bill, I guess, right? Is that just Representative Mariani's bill?
Madam Chair and Representative Swalick, basically, there are two members, I think, at least in the House carrying the bill, Representative Mariani on the K-12 side, and then we did have Representative Mullery also carry it on the data practices side. But that case that I just gave you is just a summary of the process that we went through, and then we put the language on the back. I think Commissioner Segrin had shared with you some language from that other body, you know, over there that I shall not mention. But there were some concerns raised about what kind of data we'd be sharing. You know, would it be health-related? Would it be, you know, related to behavioral issues, and we wanted to be clear with the suggested language on the legal side sheet that we've shared with you in your packet that that's not the case. So that was just suggested language.
Representative Flowers.
That's helpful. Isn't it like Harry Potter and he who shall not be named, or they who shall not be named? But, you know, there's talk of this, obviously, with early childhood, too, as well, and have you ever, that if we, when we do the testing of kids, you know, their initial screening test, that if they had a MARS number at that point, it would also be helpful. That end, is it too much to ask if we amended that on, or is it just going to bungle the whole thing? And we should consider that at some other time, or?
Commissioner,
Madam Chair, and Representative Flowers, that already happened.
Oh, Madam Chair.
Representative Flowers.
Commissioner Segrin, so this will start at, oh, it already does start at 3 then? Yes. Do we get them at 3? Because people keep talking about that like we don't. But is that when they are officially assigned?
Representative Flowers, I clarified that with staff just the other day.
Okay.
And they definitely do it. Whatever time a student comes in for their public school screening, that's when they receive a number. Now, that doesn't mean if they don't go to public school, then, you know, you never see that number again. But as long as they enroll in school, then that number will be their number.
Madam Chair?
Representative Flowers.
Well, is enrolling in a public school the same as screening, though? You know how screening is when they're about 3, and usually enrolling in school is when they're about 5.
Madam Chair? If they are screened, that inference, they will receive their number then, and that number follows them. That screening will follow them.
Okay.
If they enroll into the public school, that all goes with them.
Okay, good. Thank you. That's good to know. I didn't realize that was all in place. We've been talking about that for quite a while, so thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering if it's the A1 amendment that is to Representative Mariani's bill that Commissioner Segrin is speaking of.
Madam Chair, we've got, Representative Erickson, we've got a couple of iterations. Let's see, is this the exact one? This is The one, you've got two. You've got one with a little correct version here with a little correction.
Okay.
And that's just the whole, that's the whole amended language that we're going to be using. And that's just, this is just what was added to the original. So it's just kind of the combination of both of those. I didn't realize that you had the copied version in your packet already, so I had the page copy the whole thing. But we wanted, we're trying to be really consistent. We'll be offering that or giving that to Representative Mariani and Representative Mulley. We want to have the same language in the same, in both the Senate and the House. And so it was already done in the Senate. We'll be giving that to Representative Mariani. So we wanted to just show you what, you know, what we're trying to do, and we're restricting it to the educational data.
Are there any other questions about the presentation? If not, sounds to me like you're making good progress. And you're meeting on a regular basis and accomplishing something. And that's good.
And Representative Murphy, we're doing it without any legislative appropriation, too. So,
and without any other points.
Well, and Representative Murphy, we are going to be, there's a couple of bills in front of both bodies that will be adding legislators to the P16 Council, and bills will be moving forward also.
And you think that's a good idea,
Murphy? Well, being a former legislator, I have mixed emotions about it, to tell you honestly. I certainly think what has happened is we want to make sure that that the policymakers are informed about what the P16 partnership is doing. Most of the work that we're doing is more implementation work. It's not the work that you're doing with the broad policy, setting the policy for the state. We're looking at the P16, and ours is maybe a little bit different than some states, where they're kind of also talking about policy and setting policy tone. If you look at our work groups, it's really been about implementing. So if we're talking about more rigorous standards, then we brought the expertise together to look at our existing standards and say, how can they be college-ready standards? So we brought people in to do that, and then we fixed our standards. When we looked at the student ID system being extended throughout the whole system, that's an implementation thing, so we can do better research, so we can inform you as policymakers about, you know, the information you need to make your decision. So it's more the work than it is policy. And we've had lots of, you know, pretty frank and free discussions. I know that sometimes when a legislator comes into a room or a discussion, it can, you know, sort of, you know, can change the tone sometimes, and sometimes it doesn't. And so I think sometimes there's a little bit of concern that, you know, if a legislator speaks, then what does that mean? We have to do it. The P16 partnership has been very democratically run. We poll the members. We get their ideas about what they're interested in based on our broad parameters of teacher quality and college and preparing for the transition to college. Those are kind of our two big broad parameters. And then under that, we kind of work to see what we can do to make this successful for kids. And it's more the implementation stuff. So those are the, you know, but admittedly, because this is a new organization, only 5 years old, we probably haven't. We've been so busy working, and then people are starting to hear, well, what's this P16 partnership doing? What's it all about? That we didn't then get the communication piece going to the broader public, and I think that's probably why we weren't trying to do anything in secret or anything. It was just we were really busy working. And that was one of our next steps, and we were talking about that. Well, we need to bring in the legislators somehow. We need to either inform them every year, get their input also. Are we on the right track? Are there things that they would like us to explore that would be implementation things? But I think that there's been a strong, you know, expression of interest of having legislators on P16 partnerships. So we have, you know, no problem with that.
Mm-hmm. And then why is it P16 instead of P20? Some states have P20.
Well, and we probably will go to P20. I think that there's a kind of a mix with P16 and P20. In fact, I was just at a national meeting, and some other person said, I'm confused about P20. I mean, what is 20? And, you know, they were saying, well, the PhD candidate kinds of things. And some people were going, well, yeah, but that's a really highly selective group. Aren't we really looking at, you know, P16 and the most, you know, of what we're talking about? But I think the Senate is wanting us to do P20, and it doesn't bother us to say P20.
And it takes up to 20 years for some kids to get out of college.
We would hope not. We would hope that this would help us a lot, you know, not let that happen, that we would actually get them through in the time that they need to get through to save us some state resources. But, no, the 20 was referring more to kind of the PhD candidates, that kind of a thing. But so some states have chosen it, some have not.
All right. Any other? All right, thanks a lot. We're going to have next several bills, this Wales bill, the Slocum bill, that have to do with the makeup of the group. And we're going to have the Mariani bill and the Erdahl bill. And these are bills that have to do with the issues that were just explained to us in the P16 and teacher... effective teaching, because the chairs asked me to have the hearing on it in here because they didn't have time. I also would like Representative Flowers, you see the minutes?
Yes, Madam Chair, I read them. So moved.
Representative Flowers moves adoption of the minutes as printed. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted. I just got word when Mr. Ron came in that I will be hearing, or this committee will be, not I, this committee will be hearing the bills from the division, higher ed, K-12, early childhood, on Wednesday, the 26th.
Ooh, excellent.
And I don't know what time this committee will be meeting, but I suspect it will be meeting about the exact time that K-12 has been meeting on a regular basis. I'm not sure. We'll see.
Madam Chair.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You said the Wednesday the 26th.
Yes.
My recollection here is that we are in recess on Tuesday, Monday, Friday, and Thursday. Is that correct?
No. Pardon me?
The 26th is a Wednesday, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Wednesday the 26th, yeah.
Okay, so...
And we come back at noon on the 25th.
Okay, I'm trying to do the days in my head. When are the committees going to write up the bills then?
They're writing up the bills on the 17th, 18th, 19th.
So next
25th.
Month. So Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday next week then.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Representative
Slavik. Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, I know you're on our committee, so we're talking about potentially the 19th to be done by the time we get the bill out and... have any amendments, that type of thing. So I think that should work very well. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And they're going to be in finance on the 27th.
Okay. Madam Chair, you know, are they going to be targets coming from Ways and Means? Or we have not discussed, in the Finance Committee, we have not discussed that yet. And my understanding, I thought Ways and Means was going to have targets, but I would assume we would need the targets to write the bill.
I think so. Hmm. Any day now.
Okay.
But not today.
Not today.
Not today. But I think that's what we're working towards.
Thank you.
Yeah. You know as much as I do right now.
I could never know as much as you know.
About that issue. About that issue. Yes. Back to the agenda now. to represent Mariani, House File 3816. Education agencies allowed to share educational data in order to improve school instruction. And we don't have possession of this because it's going to be heard at 6 o'clock in Representative Mullery's committee.
Madam Chair, that's correct. You just heard the informational background from the commissioners of Ed and the Commissioner's Office of Higher Education, and we will be up at 6 p.m. and Representative Mullery's committee. And we'll probably be most likely moving that amendment that we referred to today.
The 6A1.
Right.
And tell us about this bill.
Madam Chair, basically the T16 Council has been working on this for quite some while, and one of the things that it exists is to be able to have a greater collaboration, coordination, and sort of logic across our entire educational pathway system. And we know that oftentimes, what happens in post-secondary is unknown to K-12 and vice versa. And one of the things that we're particularly interested in knowing is what relationship exists between success in post-secondary for our students that come out of our K-12 system in Minnesota relative to what they did in K-12. So, for instance, what kind of courses they took, what kind of enrichment activities, what kind of performance that they exhibit in K-12, to see if there's a way of gleaning that information for us to make both the K-12 experience that much more relevant for post-secondary success and also make post-secondary success better aligned to what's happening out of K-12. But the problem is that we really don't know that information because we can't track students, once they leave our K-12 system. So the idea here is to be able to have, with a prescribed, framework, the ability to attribute information about K-12 experiences and post-secondary success and vice versa. And so that's going to require some kind of a data, mechanism for us to be able to track students through. My understanding is that we'll be using the MARS numbering system to be able to do that. Once a student exits our grade 12, but we currently don't have the permission to be able to do that. So that's pretty much it. I mean, it's really a matter of getting much more better information out of what happens in post-secondary, out of our K-12 graduates, so that we can make K-12 that much more aligned with post-secondary expectations.
Is there any further discussion? Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Who decides, like, can private colleges get some of this information, or who? I suppose if it goes P20, I guess they could. I just wonder who all can see this information, and is it aggregate or is it individual?
So here,
Mariani, Ms. Grimes.
If she comes forward, I can tell you that the private college is actually very worried about this issue of tracking data into their private system, and that this would not have come forward if there had not been some very careful consensus and agreements with the private sector individuals, but I certainly would welcome Ms. Grimes to add further information.
Ms. Grimes, welcome.
Madam Chair, for the record, I'm Krista Grimes, on the staff of the Office of Higher Education. Yes, we have been in discussions with the private colleges. The idea is that for the most part, the data would be reported from the post-secondary institutions to our office, which it already is. We already get enrollment data reported. They would report to us MARS numbers for their incoming students. It would be printed on the high school transcripts. And then we would aggregate data, and we would be able to give data, aggregate data, total data, back to the private colleges or others who ask for it. But the individual data would mostly be a flow into us, and then we would analyze it and provide the results of it to people who want to know about it. Did that answer your question?
Representative Wardlow.
Yes, thank you.
And Madam Chair, if I can just I just want to emphasize, so Ms. Grimes emphasized the aggregate data information, and so I want to be real clear here that that's the intent of this framework and this legislation. It isn't to be able to track the aggregated per individual information.
It loses the name of the individual gets into her.
Madam Chair, my understanding is that to an extent the identifier will be kept at our office, but we will not be reporting anything other than aggregate data. And identifying characteristics such as usually social security numbers and names tend to get stripped off of it, so that in the remote chance that there would be an accidental release of the data, it would still be not be possible to release the identity of the student.
Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Does this apply to any high school graduates who would go to out-of-state institutions, or is this just students who graduate and go to a Minnesota private or public college?
Representative Mariani.
Per my understanding, is it only applies to Minnesota institutions, but I'll check with the grant.
Madam Chair, yes, my understanding is our data is reported to our office by Minnesota post-secondary institutions on students attending Minnesota post-secondary institutions.
Mm-hmm. And there's other head states also. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Another question I would have is students who maybe spend a year abroad going to school, how would there maybe a gap there in their junior or senior year as exchange students or whatever? Might be, I don't know if you've talked about that, might be something to consider in terms of the data that might be missing from that particular time frame or whatever, and how that might work.
Brian.
Madam Chair, that does occur upon occasion, and we are already dealing with those issues in our enrollment database that we have at the Office of Higher Education now.
And they would keep their same number when they come back, right?
That's right.
The number they got when they were 3 years old. This would be
assessed. Probably know that. Madam Chair, there will be students for whom there is no Mars number because they may be reciprocity students from Wisconsin, or they may have moved into the state as 11th graders, or they may be, have come from a private school. But for those that did stay in Minnesota, we will be able to follow them along.
When they come into Minnesota, then in that situation, do they get a Mars number?
Madam Chair, my understanding is that they only get a Mars number right now when they're in 12th grade, and that's in the K-12 system, through preschool now through 12th grade. But they wouldn't get a Mars number assigned, I don't think, in higher education. The Mars number, Madam Chair, is particular to the K-12 system. We do have our own number in the Office of Higher Education that we assign in our data system, but it's not a Mars number per se.
But they would get that after 12th grade.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
So the Wisconsin reciprocity student or something in college. Representative Slaway.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question that I think I might know the answer to. I heard today Senator Wieger has this bill on dropouts and trying to extend the age on that. What about dropouts? They would have their Mars number. They dropped out, got their GED, and then went on to college. I think that's something we'd probably like to know. Do you track things like that?
Ms. Hegard.
Madam Chair, my understanding, I think you're Representative Wallach, you're talking about on the K-12 side. Is that correct? I would not be able to respond to that. I think that the Department of Education does follow students who drop out. We'd have to go back and check with their folks. They have some folks here, but I don't think that they're not the folks who work particularly with the data systems at the agency. But we can go back and check on that if you'd like.
Madam Chair, I think that would be interesting. I mean, the whole idea of tracking kids, and then really they're adults by that point, but then what happens with education and then education funding, you know, correlated in terms of income and poverty, and there's a correlation to dropouts and poverty, so would there therefore be a correlation not for poverty if they run on higher education? How many kids or adults actually do that?
Madam Chair, Representative Slawick, I think those are the kinds of questions that we would begin to be able to answer with this type of data system. We'd be able to do much more in-depth, you know, analysis across the agencies. It'd be very valuable. But again, you'd have to talk with the folks from K-12, and I think their government relations folks are here, and they can take that message back.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Ruth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Did I misunderstand, Mr. Dredd? Did you say private students would not have a Mars number? I didn't hear.
Madam Chair and Representative Ruth, my understanding right now is that a Mars number is only generated when a student enters public education in Minnesota. Now, if the student entered public education and then went to a private school, K-12, you know, and then came back again, they would have had a Mars number. I, in fact, was approached by some of the private K-12 folks, school folks, and they were interested in this. They, on a voluntary basis, they were interested in this, and they, because they do have students that come in and out of private education who've been in public education, and they too are interested in what happens after they graduate. So, on the higher ed side, though, private colleges right now, we do have them in our data system because they're part of the data system. So we do collect enrollment data from all the private colleges as well as the public colleges in Minnesota.
Any other comments? Mr. Patel.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, in my last life I had supervisory responsibility for these issues in St. Paul Public Schools, and so rather than going to the Department of Education, I might be able to clarify briefly. When a student in Minnesota gets a Mars number and leaves our schools, and dropouts are the best example of this, they, in theory, retain that Mars number. However, a good number of our students who are highly mobile, maybe move out of state, actually re-enroll in a Minnesota school, and either because of administrative oversight or unintentional, or often because the student says this is the first time they're re-enrolling, they may get another Mars number. And that's a data cleanup effort. In theory, you should actually, the Mars number should remain with the student the entire time. And one of the efforts that we put in place in St. Paul, and I really want to agree with Director Hegard's point, was a project called the Diploma Completion Project, where we went and we looked at our students who had dropped out, and we went to the address of last resort, and we hired a dynamic, committed counselor to work full-time on getting them back into school. And having that Mars number was the critical way to track where they had been in their educational journey before they left us, finding ways to actually keep tracking them beyond re-enrolling them would be a major asset. So I hope that clarifies a bit about how Mars numbers work in the K-12 world at present.
Madam Chair.
Director Hegard.
In our work group, we did address that issue that Mr. Patel brings up, which is duplication. And so the Department of Education folks that I worked with stated as a top priority their interest in trying to make sure that there isn't duplication in those Mars numbers, trying to make sure that in cleaning up the data that there's a single Mars number that follows students.
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, it seems to me that with this kind of initiative that this body ought to be able to expect some kind of reporting back from our Office of Higher Ed and our Department of Education in terms of what they're learning over time with their analysis. And I suspect that over time, as we hear that as a body, we may even want to become more proactive about taking those learnings and having that guide our policy decision-making, including our resource allocation responsibilities in order to align with the knowledge that's being gleaned from this. So I think this is really an important first step toward getting much more meaningful information in the hands of this body so that we can be better stewards and guiders of education policy that's informed by good scientific research-based analysis of the kind of information that you're going to be able to have.
Ms. Hegard.
And then, Chair Representative Mariani, that's a great point, and we're always looking for, not necessarily more work, but more research ideas at the Office of Higher Education, and I don't want to speak for the Department of Education, but I think that we would be interested and welcome ideas. If there are things that you would like us to look at, if there are research ideas that you have, please bring those forward to us.
Any other comments about Representative Mariani's bill? Representative Mariani, are you going to leave it in data practices, or are you going to bring it back to your policy division?
Madam Chair, it's our intent right now is to move it out of data practices and move it forward to the floor, and then obviously to have that available for any other bill out there. We're in the midst of putting together an education policy bill which may contain this, depending on what happens in committee this evening.
Any other comments? Any advice you want to give to Representative Mariani? If not, carry on with our good wishes.
Thank you very much.
Township, please. The second item on the agenda today is House File 2625 and 2783, and I believe we don't have 2625, but we have 2783, Representative Swales, and I believe Representative Slocum is had a different approach, and the two of you have talked and gotten together.
We have indeed, Madam Chair. What you have in front of you is
Representative Swales.
House File, it's an amendment, H278384. This was originally Representative Slocum's bill, and we have integrated it into the bill that I am carrying. And basically, the bill that it is amending establishes a 220 partnership, and then this adds language so that there's a fairness aspect to it about the legislators. So essentially, House File 2783 lays out the membership of the 216 or 220 committee, and then it adds the chairs of the E12 Finance, T12 Policy, and I believe Early Childhood chairs from the House. And then Representative Slocum's bill and amendment then also, out of fairness, creates opportunities for the House Minority Leader to appoint members from that caucus to also balance out then the legislative representation.
Representative Swales, do you have just the chairs, or do you have the chair or a designated person?
I believe, let me find the language.
Because if you remember when Commissioner was speaking of having some thoughts on both sides of the issue, I suspect one of the issues was that sometimes when members are appointed to a committee of that nature, sometimes they don't show.
All right. Well, Madam Chair.
And especially if a chair has to be there all the time, maybe the chair doesn't want to be.
Correct.
Can they designate someone?
Madam Chair, that's up to the committee. Perhaps we could have an amendment to that nature. But it's line 116 and 117 on House File 2783. It says the chairs of the House and Senate committees have jurisdiction over... Okay, 114. The chairs of the House and Senate committees having jurisdiction over pre-kindergarten through grade 12 education policy, and then the next lines over higher education policy. If you would like, Madam Chair, we could add an amendment or their designees, if that would be acceptable.
I think my personal opinion through experience is that would be really a good idea.
Then that is a... I will amend it to read it that way, Madam Chair. Or their designees.
So that would be like on line 116 and...
It would be
114.
It would actually be the chairs of the House and Senate committees having jurisdiction over pre-kindergarten through grade 12 education policy, or his or her designee, I guess. Or no, their designee.
I'm sorry. Their
designee.
After the word committee, would
correct
you?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Then the same would be true, Madam Chair, for higher ed on line 1.16 and 1.17.
Does someone want to move the adoption of 2783? Representative Wardlow moves adoption of 2783. And does someone want to move the amendment? Representative Wardlow?
So moves.
Representative Wardlow moves that on the House file 2783, line 114 and 116, after the words committee, insert or their designee. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. That amendment's adopted. Do you want to have A4 added?
Madam Chair, yes, if that's possible.
Does someone want to move the adoption of...
I'm moving.
Representative Demmer moves adoption of A4. Amendment, which gives the minority party representation. Is there any further discussion of that? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. The bill is amended. Now, how does your makeup, Representative Swales, differ from the makeup of the 21 members, or is that all the 21 members that are already there with just the addition of the legislator?
Madam Chair, that's exactly what it is. The 21 members plus the legislative members would be then added. So if I could just briefly talk about that, Representative Erdahl told me I needed to speed this up because he wants to get up here, so I will make it quick.
Yeah, he knows that we go till 5:30.
Okay, well, that's fine. I'm just trying to honor his request. Madam Chair and members, last spring I had a wonderful opportunity to travel with Representative Dreiling and Representative McFarland to Austin, Texas, where we spent some time through the National Council of State Legislatures and also the Gates Foundation to look at how the state of Texas delivers their education policies to the state. And one of the things that was so impressive to me was the buy-in that members from the legislature, the business community, higher ed, and preschool through K-12, that there was such an incredible enthusiasm and partnership that was built with all of these entities. And in looking at our own state and the fact that policymakers are not at the table when we are talking about P16 or P20 issues here, and looking at the model that I saw in Texas, I felt that it was very important that at least we have some buy-in, since we are also those who finance a lot of the changes that happen in education around the state. One of the things that I particularly was excited about when I was there was seeing how the P16 committee had such a wonderful enthusiasm. I'm so thrilled with when I hear what our P16 committee has been doing. I think Commissioner Segrin described it beautifully. But as we were working this summer on high school redesign, and we talked through the many, many issues related to trying to redefine what high school should look like in the 21st century,
could look through the notes of our P16 commission that or committee that we currently have in the state. They've already been discussing these issues. For me to realize that we're kind of reinventing the wheel with the same discussions here at the legislature, things like wasted energy and wasted resources, and how much more beneficial it would be if we had members of the legislature listening in, participating in these discussions, so that we can create better policy for education. So that's the goal. Representative Slocum and I are on the same page with that. It sounds to me like the Department of Ed is also on the same page, and I would urge your adoption of this legislation.
And where do you want it to go to?
As I understood it, it needed to go to K-12 finance, but now I understand it needs to go to government ops. I don't know why, but that's what I hear. And you have the policy chair right next to you, so maybe he could whisper in your ear and tell you why.
Because it establishes the... It changes the established order of the P16.
Okay.
But
so,
I don't know.
Madam Chair, am I to understand it will go to government ops? Will it need to go to K-12 finance then?
There's no appropriation in it, but why does GovOps have that? Okay. It's Bunn. Representative Bunn.
Madam Chair, I'm not an expert on these things at all, but I thought government is not establishing this organization. It's already pre-established, right?
Right.
And so I raise two issues. One, whether government ops need to see it because it's not a government organization. But it also raises a question I don't want to really raise here because I'm for this bill is whether or not we can force them to take our people if it's not a government organization.
So it's
a government
can we force you to take our people?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
Can we force you through legislation to take our legislators?
I think if you pass the
Gosek, is it GovOps? Is that where it's going?
Madam Chair, my understanding was that according to House rules, that bills that affect the structure of state government are supposed to go to government operations unless they're part of an omnibus bill.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this actually gets back to a question I asked at the last committee, but this is a private group, a private committee. It has nothing to do with, I mean, it really doesn't have any connection with the government. And I asked the same question at Representative Bunn, whether we could even force our people onto that committee. The question was, don't ask. But I think, I'm not sure why it would have to go to GovOps. It doesn't seem to me that that's part of the government operation. It's a private entity.
Well, Ms. Hickard says if we put it in, they'll take it. Ms. Gosek says if we put it into an omnibus bill, it doesn't have to go to government ops. Representative Mariani says, yes, it could be part of the Education Policy Committee bill. Possibly. So where do you want it to go?
Wherever, Madam Chair, wherever it is most simple, I will gladly go to government ops and present it there, but I don't understand why it wouldn't be part of an education omnibus bill.
Chair?
Representative Heigerson.
Thank you. And I think if you look at the next one coming down the line, Representative Erdahl's is very related to this one, and I think they both apply to K-12 finance or policy, either one.
Although this one doesn't cost any money at all.
But they could put it in.
But they could put it in.
Yeah.
So... there's further... Yes.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm going to go way into it. I think most all of us have. in education, we establish commissions and things all the time that don't necessarily go to GovOps. I guess it would be my thought, maybe send it to Representative Mariani's committee, mm-hmm. inform the GovOps committee, and if they think they want to see it for some reason, they can request it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it would be my estimation we take it through E-12 policy and go from there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think, Representative Demmer, do you think this is a good idea?
You mean the bill, Madam Chair? Well, to be honest about it, I think the P16 partnership is working well. I don't typically like to tinker with things that are working well, but if the partnership itself is okay with this, then I'd be okay with it too. But to be honest about it, it is working well. I think it's good people. They have had meetings with legislators that I know invited us to come in and see what's going on. So I guess just so we're not making it so cumbersome, Madam Chair, that they can't function, that'd be my only concern.
Well, I feel more comfortable whoever's going to make the motion as amended, send 2783 as amended back to K-12, because that's where we got it from. And that's who asked Harriet. No, you don't have time. You don't have time.
That's why I'm asking for.
If you want. Okay. Any further discussion about the merits of the issue of adding representatives and senators and minorities? Okay. If not,
are you looking for a motion?
Yes, I am. We're so unused to passing bills in here. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will move that we move this bill 2783 as amended to K-12 policy for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Representative Ward moves adoption of 2783 and be recommended to pass or for possible inclusion in the K-12 bill. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Erdahl. Representative Erdahl, welcome to the committee. House file 2624.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. I do have an amendment. Do you have that?
Mm-hmm. Representative Erdahl requests that somebody move his bill and Amendment A4.
Madam Chair.
Representative Wardlow?
I'll move House File 2624.
Representative...
to recommend it to be, I don't know where it's going, K-12 policy or finance?
Well, Representative Erdahl asked me to send it to the floor, but Representative Darling says it has to be sent back to our committee because it has a fiscal note.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Representative Erdahl.
Let's
kind of worry about where it's going to go when we're done with it, because the fiscal note might kind of float away a little bit.
$15,000 might go away.
There's a chance. along those lines, I really like Representative Ward's motion. That was a fine motion. The proper time. Maybe we could do it again.
Please tell us about the bill.
All right, thank you.
Wait a minute. You want the amendment first,
yeah.
Representative Heidgerken? Oh, Representative Wardlow?
Madam Chair?
You want to add a fourth to your motion?
Madam Chair, I move Amendment 264 A4.
All right. Representative Wardlow moves adoption of the Amendment A4. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. The bill is in the form you wanted.
Thank you very much. Health File 2624 establishes a task force under the Department of Education to seek to improve teacher quality, identifying institutional structures and strategies for effectively integrating secondary and post-secondary academic and career education. Now, we face challenges in education in this state. We can learn ways to meet these challenges by examining the good that we do in Minnesota and also other states and internationally. Since I have relayed this to several of you previously and to other committees, part of my impetus in doing this came from a vacation that I took to Finland this fall. Finland is ranked internationally as perhaps the best education system. In my questioning there, I asked why. They said they had good teachers. That was their number one teachers, number one, two, and three, actually. All the teachers have master's degree programs in their field of study. In Minnesota, it's about one-third of our teachers have master's degrees in their actual field. Also, they concentrate on getting the most out of their teachers and by intervening to help struggling students. And so, with those thoughts in mind, it is my intention to form a task force that would examine the various successful programs, be they in our state, nationally, or internationally, and come back to the legislature with some suggestions on what we can do to increase the number of master's degree teachers that we have and to integrate other educational programs into our system. We are good in Minnesota now. This is looking at how can we be better, and we need to examine ways in which we can do this. Now, as you've commented, I've been here 6 years. I don't know that I'll ever truly understand fiscal notes. I've done other, similar task forces. We did one through the Department of Education a couple of years ago on lockdowns, and I asked them to be worded a particular way, and there was no fiscal note. It was zero. It just run through the department. And asked that it be done the same way this time, and it comes back $15,000. Now, I should comment just a couple of things. It says in the bill that they cannot be compensated. They may be reimbursed. Well, there are a couple little things in here like travel, lunches. It says may. They don't have to give that $4,000 out or whatever it is. So anyway, just a brief commentary on that. I do have Ms. King from the department here, and she would testify as well.
All right, Ms. King.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. And the department fully supports the bill before us for the advisory task force. It aligns very well with the department's policy on an emphasis on philosophy on professional development with an emphasis on the learner. And it also aligns very well with academic standards. And at this time, you know, given the nature of the cost and looking at various ways that we could work this task force, I believe the department can absorb the cost of the fiscal note.
Ms. King, you believe that the department can absorb the cost, and you fully support the purpose of this task force, and this task force fits right in.
That is
what you're already doing.
That is absolutely correct, Madam Chair. It supports the work that we're currently doing in ensuring that teachers are focused on content areas that they're teaching in their classroom, and providing professional development aligned with the learner. There are various ways that we could work meeting, maybe a half-day meeting. I think there are different ways that we could work this task force.
Or tell them to bring their own lunch.
Brown bag.
Ms. Peterson? Representative Peterson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a question, I think, for Representative Erdahl, maybe the other testifier, but in the past, what do you think has been the incentive for teachers to get their master's degree? Certainly they've had the desire always to get more education, but have there been incentives in place for them to achieve a master's degree or even hire a doctorate degree?
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, well, you know, certainly there is the financial incentive on the way the steps and lanes are built in. You know, as educators, we know that. I think that is a prime element for many of them. Certainly they want to do better in the classroom. They want to, through more education, do a better job of teaching. But the disconnect there, I think, a little bit, is once again, you know, if I am a an English teacher, I think that it would behoove me to be more effective in my classroom to get a master's degree in English and not in education or some other area. And this will look for ways to encourage people, teachers, to do that.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I would agree that sets and lanes have been pretty decisive in moving people along that continuum of education. In elementary education, though, you're not suggesting a content area, or maybe you are, that the master's degree be in a content area rather than elementary education or middle school. Are you suggesting that? Or maybe that is the work of the task force. I wasn't quite sure reading the language. Are you suggesting a content area master's for the elementary?
Madam Chair and Representative Peterson, no, I'm not. I do think that that's the work of the task force to determine how best that should be done.
Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since I'm a co-author on this bill, I suppose I speak to it.
When you say co-author,
the second author or the only author you've got, I don't know.
Oh, no, there's a bond.
No, there's a bond. I know Reverend Driving's on it, I believe. So that leaves huge crudeness to this bill. I agree with the idea of the master's in your subject, at least for secondary, because from my own experience, you know, I taught math and I got a master's in math, and that made me understand what I was telling the kids to do a whole lot more than if I hadn't. And I think the same would be true for English, and the same would be true for science. As far as elementary teachers go, maybe they would get a master's in elementary education with an emphasis on reading or an emphasis elsewhere. I just support this whole idea because I know teachers who got a master's in curriculum, and I was trying to figure out how does that help you teach math, and maybe it does, maybe it doesn't, but But I do agree, the additional incentive to get that master's, well, there were two incentives. One incentive was to make more money. Another incentive is because you have to get continuing ed credits, and the college course is 10 credits per hour, which gets you up to 120 pretty quickly. But the biggest reason was because I wanted to be an expert in my field, and I think that should be the real reason people go on. But to encourage that is a good idea. So I support the bill.
Thank you. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erdahl, don't you think this could be accomplished by the P16 group that we heard from earlier? Because teacher quality is one of their emphases, and I would think this would work very nicely into their group, and they pull from a wide array of persons, such as you mentioned, or groups such as you mentioned in your task force composition.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Erickson. I think that the P16 is so comprehensive and has so many other items that they should deal with that collaboratively we can focus more just in these couple of areas with this group. Thank you.
Representative Weidenbaum.
Madam Chair, that was my other question, but since it was going so smoothly, I didn't want to screw up your bill. But I was wondering if the department has any thoughts on that.
Madam Chair, Ms. King, members of the committee, I would agree. We really, the P16 is comprehensive, and teacher quality is, right now, there's such a need and such a sense of urgency to ensure that we have teachers right now in the classroom that are working and teaching within their field of study, and they have a proper support behind them. We pulled some numbers earlier today off our data, and it appears that approximately, and this is reported from district, 50% of our teachers, approximately 50% of our teachers have master's degree, but generally the content of that is unknown. So many of them are K-12 curriculum and instruction. And so focusing on a particular need for 1 year would be beneficial.
Representative Peterson. Oh, no. No? Okay. He's done. Okay. Any other discussion? Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative, I think this is a very good bill, too. I just have one question, and it came from Representative Peterson's question as well. I ended my career teaching a class called Service Learning. I don't know the master's in Service Learning. So what if an educator has a area that he or she, there is no master's in that area? What happens at that point?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Ward, that's what the task force to figure out.
Any further discussion? Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I came in late on the discussion. Maybe this was discussed, but my question is that this is that's some interesting things. You're going to foster classroom teacher interest and ability to acquire a master's degree. You're going to meet the elementary and secondary students' needs for adequate education planning and preparation. And we're going to report back. How do we measure this? We're talking about some pretty interesting ideas, but how do you quantify this and so that it would be a meaningful report? I mean, what's the report going to tell us specifically, or what are we looking for in the report?
Madam Chair, Representative Eastland, ways in which we can make it easier for teachers to get master's degrees is a prime goal of this, or to encourage teachers to get master's degrees. And the other part, once again, ways in which academic and vocational education can be integrated in maybe different ways into our school system. But again, these are things that we're looking for the task force to consider through all of these fine groups to make that determination. And also, Representative Eastland, that's not enough. I can give you an in-depth discussion of this tomorrow morning before we get going.
For Representative Eastland.
Thank you. I guess what I think of figuring out ways to improve education is, and I think it's in here, it's, we look for results in kids. We look for results in the performance that our students are exhibiting. And I hope that's part of what we're doing here. Is what we're trying to do is figure out how to better prepare teachers to get better results out of our kids. And I don't see that very specifically outlined in here. And I guess that's just a comment. You don't have to respond. I'll talk about it with you tomorrow morning.
A brief response, Madam Chair. I mean, we intentionally kept it broad and didn't get real specific on some of these things, but I can talk to you about that.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I do just have to make a comment after Representative Eastland's, because even talking about the early childhood, we talk about both inputs and performance in little children, and I think when we get to all ages of school, we look certainly at teachers as we're moving along this continuum, at least with performance, pay, etc. We're looking at both the inputs as well as performance, and I think you're on the input side, which I think is important, and having been at the table negotiating contracts over the years, the big incentive to get people to get masters was to see that they got some reimbursement on the pay schedule for those classes, or got some kind of a sabbatical or some sort of reimbursement for the time and effort that they took to get those. So I hope as they go along, you'll certainly focus on that part of how you get the incentives for teachers to do that. But then I think as another part of that, also focus on the performance part. And I don't know, that probably isn't part of your bill. I think yours is strictly how to get people to greater degrees of academic excellence. That's what it looks like in here. I don't think you have a performance piece in this one, do you?
Madam Chair.
Representative Erdahl.
Representative Peterson, not specifically in that way, but again, that can come out of this. I mean, as I said, I have intentionally not been real specific with some of these things because I want the flexibility to be there for the task force.
Any further discussion? Representative Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just, as I look through this, I see that the emphasis is on fields of licensure, and I would hate to have, and maybe this isn't your intent, but you did mention a master's in education in general, and having gone through that type of program, I would hate to have left out in your research that type of program, which truly teaches teachers beyond their subject matter onto teaching to different types of intelligences, differentiated learning, different levels of ability. It's a wonderful, wonderful program to create student success.
Representative Erdahl.
Madam Chair, Representative, we are not excluding anything.
If not, Representative Wardlow renews his motion to recommend that 2624 as amended be passed and sent to the floor with the understanding that if we don't get a brand new amended fiscal note, Representative Greiling will ask for it to be returned to her committee.
Madam Chair.
Representative Erdahl.
Was my understanding that perhaps we were going to Representative Mariani's committee to be included in the omnibus bill?
Oh, I didn't have that. I didn't. That wasn't in my pre-meeting copy. Well, Representative Wardlow moves that House File 2624, as amended, be recommended to pass to Representative Mariani's bill or committee and be included in the omnibus education bill unless Representative Greiling pulls that part out because there is not an amended fiscal note. The fiscal note's got to get down to zero. Okay. Otherwise, Representative Mariani's omnibus bill will have to go to K-12 finance and be heard in education, finance, and economic competitiveness division on March 26th.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Don't worry about it. I'm sure everything will work out.
All in favor of the Wardlow Amendment?
Is that possible inclusion, or is that for
probable,
sure?
Probably.
For inclusion was the way Representative Wardlow said
absolutely.
It.
Yeah, absolutely.
The way I heard it. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion is adopted. Representative Wardlow.
I just want to clarify one thing. I'm not the second author in the bill. I'm just the only other Republican author.
Thank you.
Well, it shows leadership.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Thank you, Ms. King. Next week, we're going to talk about the effects of the governor's budget. And although some things were held harmless, other things aren't. That's under the umbrella of this committee. Representative Rukavina has there's parts of the budget that definitely negatively affect the economic development stuff in Representative Rukavina's committee, and certainly higher ed, and Representative Swalwick, early childhood things, and child care issues are affected by the governor's recommendations, so we're going to talk about the budget next week. Hearing no more discussion, this meeting is adjourned.